this is the last session of the weekend, I'm going to go right ahead and assume that you're all here, still here at 7:30 on a Sunday night, because you're serious about trying to grapple with the questions of how best we can change the world. So I'm not going to go over again all of the shocking statistics and stories of the poverty, wars, environmental destruction and inequality that are a direct result of the priorities of capitalism. And also, we've just finished having our featured session on the case for revolution. So instead, I want to talk about a necessary component of both this and what needs to happen today to challenge that horror and misery that we've heard about all weekend that's happening throughout the world. In other words, I want to talk about the need for a socialist organisation and, of course, why you should be a part of ours. The idea that socialists would need distinct organisations may sound obvious when you think that every political current that has existed in history has, from liberalism to conservatism to Labour Party reformism, has used organisations as a way to cohere their supporters and further their demands. And, you know, just one small example of this, I think, today was the Palm Sunday rally that we went to. These events do not spring out of nowhere. They need organisations of people who can do things like, you know, put up the posters or tell their congregation at church to come to the demonstrations. All of these things are needed to organise action to push for any sort of social change. But this simple and what would seem somewhat obvious question, obvious need, is actually a much more contested and complex question than would first appear. First, we need to understand, I think, why the working class needs organisations to further its interests, but also exactly what kind of organisations are most capable of doing so. And I think in answering these two questions, we can begin to understand the need for a socialist organisation. The idea that the working class needs its own organisations to defend its interests is not, of course, as universal as it may appear in some of our sessions over the weekend. One argument against this is the typical conservative and small-l liberal view of society that, as Margaret Thatcher, the arch-conservative British politician, claimed, there is no society, there is only individuals. This, of course, is rubbish, like most of what she said. It's nonsense. Society is not made up simply of a mass of individuals. Capitalism is a society that is fundamentally divided into two antagonistic classes, and this antagonism is the primary dynamic driving social development and also organisations. There is, on the one hand, you know, the working class, the majority of us who produce everything in this world, and on the other hand, the capitalist class, who live off the profits they reap by our labour. Because of this dynamic, the interests of these two classes are diametrically opposed, and there is a constant conflict over the distribution of society's goods and services. And this conflict is always going on, whether it is easy to see or not. Sometimes, such as during the big industrial relations rallies and the employer backlash about how much profits they lost, it's easy to see, but at other times, not so easy to see. And, you know, this is partly explained because, you know, these conflicts often take the form of political demands as well. So, you know, you can see the war in Iraq, the campaign against that, or the campaign against uranium mining, and just so many others that have happened. So this underlying tension that I described sets the stage for the conflicts that occur daily and gives rise to organisations that exist to fight or manage or ride out this conflict. One proof, I think, of this conflict is the existence of trade unions. The fact that workers have had to form exclusively working class organisations to fight for a more just society proves that despite the musings of the likes of Margaret Thatcher, that the world is indeed divided into two antagonistic classes. And I think that the other proof of this is the response that the capitalist class has built up and refined a whole range of institutions that serve the purpose of maintaining its rule. This is necessary for the simple fact that they are a tiny minority of people who live like parasites off the activity of the rest of us. The capitalist state, for example, its various institutions are just one example of this. You know, so Parliament is given the powers to make laws to manage Australian capitalism, And this power is used to pass the work choices legislation or to water down land rights legislation to protect mining interests. In other words, to provide a legal framework for the exploitation of the working class and the oppressed for the benefit of the capitalists. And then backing up this legislative power is the threat of coercion, what you may have heard referred to as the monopoly of violence. The police force is used to break up picket lines and to control demonstrations or crack down on them when they manage to achieve things like freeing refugees at the Woomera Detention Centre in 2002. The police force is an armed organisation controlled by the capitalist state that exists to make it harder for us to challenge the power of the ruling class. And then importantly, backing up this potential for coercion are the ideological institutions like the media, the schools and universities, the churches and the think tanks that are organised to pump out a whole range of ideas that justify the madness of this system. And there are many other examples of how the capitalist class has a massive, powerful set of institutions and organisations at their disposal to maintain the status quo. Because of this, then, we need to be clear that if we are ever going to stop them from waging war or destroying the planet or whatever, we need to match their strength. We need to have an organisation that can match their strength and take on all of their institutions and win. Once we recognise that what the working class is up against, refusing to build an organisation is nothing short of criminal. And it's not just me saying this. As I mentioned before, the working class has, since its inception, formed many different types of organisations to do just this, and we are holding this talk in a building that is testament to this very fact. The question, once we proceed from there, then, is what kind of organisation is needed? What kind of organisation can best fight for the interests of the working class and the oppressed, and one day lead them in the creation of a fundamentally different world through revolution? And speaking of this building, trade unions, for instance, are the basic fighting organisations of the working class. They attempt to organise all workers in one trade or industry or workplace in order to use workers' collective power as the sole producers to win a better deal within the system. They are a recognition, a level of what Marxists call class consciousness, that workers can only fight for a better deal collectively, and that because of the competing interests of workers and capitalists, they need to be exclusively working class organisations. And this is why socialists support and build trade unions on principle, and why working members of Socialist Alternative are required to be a member of their relevant union. But despite all of these positives, trade unions do not solve and rarely confront the other major prop of the system, the ideology that justifies it. As I pointed out earlier, capitalists rely on ideology to maintain their system. So as Marx famously pointed out, the ruling ideas of any age are the ideas of the ruling elite. It is necessary for the smooth running of capitalism that most people buy into these ideas, but that they continue to accept the way things are. One example, I think, of these ideas, and we've gone over many this weekend, is that, people are believed to be too greedy or selfish or apathetic to change the world for the better. It's just one example, but there are so many more that it's impossible to list them all. And often they work in different and quite contradictory or seemingly contradictory ways, but, the point is that all of them are means to prevent people from seeing their real interests. All of these ideas, all of these forms of ideas, infiltrate the working class, and this is what makes it crucial that there are workers' organisations that can challenge these ideas amongst workers. But it's, I think the other flip side to this, though, is that workers are not automatons, not just sponges that absorb everything that the media floods us with. These ideas, all of the racist or sexist or homophobic ideas or, nationalist ideas, you can name them all, penetrate unevenly, and often an individual's family history, their own experience of exploitation and oppression, all impact on them, as well as the ideas that are peddled by the capitalists. And this is what Marxists call mixed consciousness. In other words, the working class is made up of people, surprise, surprise. Women, men, whites, blacks, migrants, gays, lesbians, manual workers, intellectual workers, you know, if you're starting to get the picture. Because of this, you know, of course, the working class is not homogenous mass. You know, some workers, and this has been described before this weekend, some workers consider themselves socialists. Some workers take on reactionary ideas and, you know, vote for the Liberal Party. But most workers are somewhere in between with ideas that fluctuate in response to events and other factors, but generally subscribe to capitalist ideologies. Now, for this very reason, we need a socialist organisation to cohere the most class-conscious workers, the much maligned term, the vanguard. Those that can see the dynamics of the class struggle, the need to go beyond the legalities established by the capitalist state, the negative role of divisions like racism and sexism, and most importantly, the belief that workers are actually capable of running the world. So the revolutionary organisation exists to pull other workers to the left, to convince workers of their potential power, and to break the working class from the ideas that hinder it from fighting. You know, this is carried out, I think it's important to see, by the organisation, you know, through its own party press, through public events, debates with their workmates and friends. And obviously, you know, we need to be organised to do this more effectively, you know, but we also need to be organised around a specific set of politics to challenge the ideas that prop this system up. And this is where political clarity comes in. I think, you know, it's important to see that political clarity is important. You know, we need to be organised around a particular set of revolutionary ideas, because it is not just ideas that blatantly support the system, that the status quo, that infiltrate the working class. Reformism. The idea that the best way for workers to improve their own situation is to elect some well-meaning leaders to carry out partial change in the parliament is the dominant idea among workers today. And, you know, we need to see that this idea has currency because of the powerlessness that workers experience in their daily lives. And you can think about this. You know, it's hard to imagine that we would or, you know, should have any say over what happens in Canberra if we, you know, barely have any control over what we do in our own workplace, you know, what we study, how much we pay for our tram tickets, etc. The idea that the workers can't fundamentally change society is one of the most useful ideas for the capitalist class, because then it is used through reformism to look to leaders to guide the discontent of workers into the so-called proper channels, and, you know, by this we know they mean channels that are acceptable to them. Reformist ideas, especially those within the organised working class, are ideas that support the system, that ultimately place the smooth running of capitalism above the consideration of the working class. And these ideas are propagated within the working class by the Labor Party, with its, I was going to say tens of thousands of members, but I was informed by Mark Latham it's only a few thousand these days. But they still have, you know, strong organisational links to the trade unions. Reformism is an ideology that maintains the system, and this is what explains why Rudd, you know, even though he has the support of millions of workers who are so enthusiastic about a long overdue alternative to the Liberals, you know, even though he has this support, has maintained his support for neoliberalism, and has lately come out in support of, you know, increasing federal funding to the richest private schools in the country, like Geelong Grammar needs more than $1.6 million a year, increasing uranium mining and sending more troops, you know, to fight the war on terror in Afghanistan. These policies are the outcomes of an ideology that seeks to exist within the bounds of capitalism. So, obviously, we need to have an organisation with the political clarity that can challenge reformist ideas, because they are the dominant ideas in the working class today. So, like I said, reformism can take a hold because of the powerlessness that workers feel today. But I think crucially, the other reason that the Labor Party can continue today to be the bastion of the status quo in the working class is because there is no alternative organisation that has the power to challenge its leadership. We need a socialist organisation with the strength to fight the dominance of the Labor Party in the organised working class with ideas and politics that can challenge their propaganda and, dare I say, their lies. And this battle for the leadership of the working class is vitally important. No more so than in revolutionary situations, when the existence of a revolutionary socialist organisation with a mass of working members that know that workers can change the world and have some idea about how to do it is critical for the success of the revolution. And you may have heard in some of the talks over the weekend that it is in these situations that it is above all reformist ideas, you know, the ideas that deny the possibility that of pushing past the current system and creating a better world, that the working class must be won away from if it is to ever succeed. In the meantime, the existence of a socialist organisation that could challenge the leadership of the ALP would radically change the political situation in Australia, and I think definitely for the better. We might have been sitting around in rooms for the weekend discussing and debating ideas, but this is not just an academic debate on what is the nicest or most effective way to change society. It has real, concrete consequences for what happens to people's lives today. And we can have a look, I think, at the industrial relations campaign. When the early rallies were happening, the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, which is kind of like the bosses' union, was almost frothing at the mouth over the estimated $30 million that cost to businesses from just one morning off. Imagine if these rallies had been followed up by a coordinated, ongoing strike of even more industries like teachers, electrical, transport workers, hospitality workers, office workers, public servants. as well as, you know, students shutting down their universities. And it's not inconceivable that the ACTU could have pulled this off. During the early days of the campaign, one poll recorded that 44% of respondents supported mass ongoing industrial action against the reforms. And this is a very large number if you think that actually none of the leadership, none of the National Union leadership or the ALP were actually arguing for this sort of strategy. The governments and industry groups pushed for the work choices legislation because they wanted to boost their profits. If the ACTU had shown its willingness to seriously damage those profits, it would have made the laws not worth implementing. Unfortunately, you know, as the campaign wore on and state and federal elections got closer, the ACTU and the ALP backed away from such a militant suggestion. If there had been an organisation with workers in numerous industries that could carry the arguments for a strike, who could get motions passed at delegates' meetings and, most importantly, actually be able to pressure the union leadership to carry these out, the situation would have been very different. We may have actually seen a situation where we could have beaten these laws. And this is important because, it wouldn't have led to a situation where 1 million people have been forced onto AWAs, slashing their working conditions and removing any job security left these days. It wouldn't have led to the situation when we heard on Friday night that casual workers, in particular retail and hospitality workers, have seen a slash to their wages of 12% in just 1 year, where the gap between women and men's pay has increased in just 1 year. It's amazing. And then on top of this, I think, you know, we would have been in a position where we could have inflicted the first major defeat on the Howard government in years, and this would have major ramifications for all the other campaigns that are going on at the moment, from the anti-war campaign to the campaign to stop more uranium mining and nuclear weapons to the campaign for Aboriginal rights and so on, and all of those campaigns that need to happen today. It is in this sense that it is important to see the very practical consequences of not having a mass organisation with the power to provide an alternative to the timidity of the ALP and the ACTU. This is the type of organisation I'm sure you've heard this weekend that Socialist Alternative is building towards. And obviously we need many more people to help us achieve this. But we aren't, you know, just sitting on our hands and knees in the meantime waiting for that unexpected influx of these people. We seize every opportunity open to us to try and make a difference where we can today. And VSU, the Voluntary Student Unionism, was the example that I wanted to raise. It was Socialist Alternative student members who have a reputation on their campuses for being consistent and determined activists and have a small base in the campus and national student unions that pushed through the plans for the mass rallies against VSU in 2004. I was at the National Union of Students Conference. I'm going to call it NUS because it's a habit. The year that we found out that the Liberals were planning to bring in VSU the next year. And as a response, the Labor students started proposing all sorts of contingency plans, including putting NUS into a trust fund. In other words, putting the National Union of Students in a bank vault to wait until the Labor Party got elected at the federal election. Mm. You know... Well, you know, not only would this have meant the total destruction of the National Union in the eyes of students, but it came out later that the Labor Party wasn't even going to repeal the full VSU if they did get elected. All of the other groups who opposed this plan were too disorganised to mount a serious opposition to the Labor students who dominated the conference. It was Socialist Alternative members that pushed for, and in the end won, the support of the conference for the national rallies that became the showpieces of the campaign. These rallies were the largest student protests in almost a decade and have laid a solid foundation for the task that we face today of trying to confront and deal with VSU. If it was not for these big shows of student support, many university administrations would not have agreed to maintain the millions of dollars of funding that they have. And also, many students who are coming onto the campuses for the first time have heard about the existence of the student unions because of the public campaigns. Many, you know, remember the demonstrations, and I've had quite a few say to me that, you know, of course they're going to join up to the student union because that's exactly what Howard doesn't want them to do. How am I going for time? I was just... there was one other example I was going to use, but because it's the last session of the night, and also Liz went over it in the introduction to Socialist Alternatives, I won't go over. This was the role, just briefly, that Socialist Alternative played in the campaign, particularly on the campuses, but also on the streets, against the war in Lebanon. There was no other organisation on the campuses that was prepared to take a stand. The Greens were too busy worrying about, you know, being neutral. Yeah, and the Labor Party was too busy confirming its support for Israel. You know, and this in war on terror, Australia is no small impact that we made to stand up to the racism and our anti-Muslim racism. Where I had, you know, right-wing students on the campuses describing Lebanese children as animals. So again. Okay, just once again, we want to be an organisation that can carry on these things on a broader scale than just the university campuses. We can begin to challenge the Labor Party for leadership of the workers' movement. But in the meantime, we are making a valuable contribution to a number of important campaigns and keeping alive the idea that you should be proud to take a stand, to be uncompromising in your opposition to a system that breeds war and poverty and destruction on such a massive scale. We are doing this today with just a few hundred members. If we had just a few hundred more, this would make an even bigger impact. And I think one thing that I'll take away from the conference is what Sherry Wolfe said on the Friday night about the soldiers in Iraq today reading a book that their organisation published about the revolt of soldiers in Vietnam, how small organisations, because of the lack of leadership in broader society, can have a much bigger impact than their size would suggest. In conclusion, most Australians today Most Australians are crying out for an alternative to the politics of sellouts and compromises that characterise mainstream politics today. Every poll that comes back shows that the majority are not only opposed to Howard's agenda, but they're to the left of the Labor Party on everything from uranium mining to the war in Iraq to the treatment of refugees to, you know, tax cuts, everything. We need an organisation, you know, but we need an organisation because Howard keeps getting away with all of these things because the Labor Party can't put up a consistent and principled stand to these attacks. We need an organisation, a revolutionary organisation that can start to give people the confidence to argue to their friends and workmates that they need to take a stand themselves and not look to people like Rudd. We need an organisation that has the strength to follow through on its demands and can lead demonstrations and strikes and movements. This is what we are trying to build here in Socialist Alternative. And if you haven't joined already, we need everyone we can that does agree that we need to take a stand to join us to help us out in this project. Thanks.